It's time for the Apple Watchcast. While we wait for our new Series 5 to arrive, we talk about an Apple patent for palm biometrics, magnetic issues with certain watch bands and the new compass in the Series 6, new requirements for Apple Watch apps, and how much lighter is the titanium case compared to the stainless steel, plus reviews of the long-awaited Slice Charge Pro and transitioning to an iPad from your Mac. This and a whole lot more. It's all coming up next on the Apple Watchcast. The Apple Watchcast is brought to you by the wonderful support of our Patreon subscribers. Become a patron of the Apple Watchcast, and for as little as a dollar a month, you can help us keep producing this show and get a little something extra in return, like access to bonus episodes, Apple Watchcast gear, and even be a guest on the show. So check out our page at patreon.com/Apple Watchcast to subscribe and become a patron of the Apple Watchcast. This is the Apple Watchcast, episode 296, recorded Tuesday, September 17th, 2019. Series 6 with palm reading.
It's time for the Apple Watchcast. Apple Watchcast, a podcast dedicated to the Apple Watch.
It's time for the Apple Watchcast, where we talk about any and everything Apple Watch, Apple's most personal and healthy device yet, and the number one watch in the world. I'm your host, Tom, and joining me is Chris. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Good evening, Tom. Good to be here.
Yes, great to be here. Quick note, Vincent is traveling this week, so hopefully he will be joining us next week.
We hope. Yes.
Just couldn't make it this week. Another quick programming note up front. If you are a Patreon subscriber to this show, there hopefully will be an episode of Overtime available for this show. And that's kind of where we continue recording after the show, and you get to hear some of the fun stuff we talk about. So it's just a way to for the show to kind of continue a little bit longer. It's only available to Patreon subscribers. So if you'd like to hear that, head over to patreon.com/Apple Watchcast and subscribe. So we are in what I like to call the Apple event hangover period, where we've binged on all the new Apple stuff. We spent way too much money, and now we're just kind of waiting to get the cool stuff delivered. Mm-hmm. So I didn't ask you, Chris, did you order a watch or a phone or anything yet?
I have not ordered anything, Tom. I haven't even really looked at anything other than what we learned. But this weekend, I may walk into an Apple store and check a couple things out. So I can't guarantee I won't walk out with something new, but right now I haven't done anything.
Oh, I can. I can guarantee you're going to walk out with something new. I've heard that story before. just walk in to look around. Huh?
Yeah. Well, the always-on feature, when they opened with it, I was like, cool. But now the more and more I read about it and think about it and hear about it, I like it a lot.
Yeah, yeah. To me, that is the if that was the only new thing on it, I'd still get it. Of course, it doesn't really matter what I say because I'm always going to get the new watch. But man, that's a big feature. Mm-hmm. That's been waiting since day one.
It is.
For something like that.
I've turned my wrist a couple times, and you're like, okay, I got to do the extra turn, and I'm like, I need that always on feature.
Yeah, I'm counting the days. As we record this, it's Tuesday night. Friday, my watch is supposed to arrive. Now, I've still not received a shipping notice.
Mm, really?
But I have read that some people have gotten them early, the shipping notice, and that some of them the package is actually ahead of the notice. So that everything's on track. Yeah, like you might not get the notice till later, but hopefully it'll, because when I checked out, it did say that date. Now, I checked a while back. I looked at the same watch I ordered. And right now, I think you're looking at mid-October.
No kidding.
Yeah. So I guess doing it that day, I guess, was the right move for me because I needed it before mm-hmm. I leave again. I'm actually home for only a few days here. And I guess Apple must be listening to the show, or better yet, they have my calendar, iCal, right? So they know that I'm only home for a few days, so they timed it perfectly to deliver the day before I leave. So that's going to work out absolutely great.
Well, you'll have to post the unpackaging on Facebook.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be fun. I always like to take pictures of that. Now, you have the Apple Card, right?
I do.
So you walk into an Apple store, you're doomed. Well, because you got that 3% whispering in your ear too, right?
I do. And I just paid the bill.
Ah, okay.
So now I've gone through a full cycle.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I got my, my card arrived while I was gone. So I have just now, the other day, activated it for the first time. And it was ridiculously easy and fast. No phone number to call. I didn't have to enter all the numbers nonsense. You just put your phone near the card it came in and boom, done. Mm-hmm. Activated. I love it. That is so... If the other credit card companies learn nothing from this, please learn that. Well, because it's so simple to do.
It is. And I had an embarrassing situation, more funny. I give a funny than anything else. I thought, since I already used the card electronically, it was working. I threw it down and the lady came back and said, "We've never seen this and it doesn't work."
Oh, you didn't activate your physical card.
I didn't activate the physical card. I thought it automatically activated when I used it electronically.
And it
didn't. So I just Googled it, activated it, and gave it back to him and said, run it again.
But you still had the packaging?
No. The card was in my wallet.
How did you activate it then?
From the phone.
Oh, okay. You can do it from the phone.
Yeah.
You don't need the actual card. The packaging it came in.
No, because it said, what did it say? It said you need the packaging. I said, oh, that's not good. It's thrown away.
Oh,
but then there's another way to do it. I can't remember exactly how I did it, Tom, but I did it on the phone.
That makes sense. That would be another way, because apparently the packaging had in it some sort of RFID thing to recognize the phone.
Yeah, it quickly went into the recycling.
Okay. Now, I have to admit that I have a somewhat silly problem of how to store my Apple Card. Mm-hmm. So where do you keep yours?
In my wallet. I mean, if it gets scratched or dull, I don't care.
Okay. So a leather wallet.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Next to other cards.
Yes.
Okay. See, I'm worried about how that's going to look over time, because in a wallet, you know, it's going to become discolored and eventually kind of ugly looking, mm-hmm. because other cards do. It'll look like an ordinary card.
It will.
So for right now, I put it between the backside of two different business cards in my wallet. Mm. So I figure the white paper should be safe, mm-hmm. since it was shipped that way from Apple. Of course, their paper was probably some super acid-free special paper they had made just for the shipping of the card, you know? So, yes. Hey, Apple, how about making a sleeve for the card out of that paper that has the RFID protection in it and charge us all $40 for it? You know what? They would sell a ton of them.
They would.
That just make them out of – it's made out of paper, for goodness sakes.
Very interesting.
That'd be
thought.
Pretty funny. But they should. I bet they would, mm-hmm. sell a bunch. Mm-hmm. And then I had a quick question. This is something that came up. Does the card have a magnetic strip? I know it has a chip. But does it have a magnetic strip? I look in the back. Where's the stripe? Or did they do away with that completely?
You know, that's a good question. I didn't even notice, because I just either chip it or use it electronically.
Right. Now, when I go to these trade shows, we have a register, and I check people out all day. And every now and then, you get a card. I still get them, believe it or not, that do not have chips. The people still have some of those, and I have to swipe the card. So that got me thinking, and I looked on the back of the Apple Card. I couldn't tell unless that band at the bottom is the stripe, but kind of like that white or that different color
band. Yeah, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if that is, because sometimes when you run it, if the chip isn't recognized, sometimes it'll ask to swipe it as a backup. Some of the register technologies do that. So I don't know if Apple just said, forget it, we're going to get everybody to do this electronically eventually. We're not even going to, mm-hmm. put a magnetic strip in there. I don't know. If anybody knows, let us know. Yeah, let us know, because I'm not even sure. In fact, you know what I should do? I should just run it through my own register. I'll try that. at our next show. I'll try to swipe the card and see if it does anything.
I'll use it tomorrow. I'll be traveling around tomorrow. I'll try it.
Of course, I'm thinking, I don't want to swipe it. I might scratch it. So I don't even want to put it in a card reader. Oh, Apple, you made it look too good. It looks too nice.
I inserted mine into a chip reader, and all I heard was scratches.
Oh, no.
And I thought, that's not good at all. And I pulled it out, and it was fine.
Well, that coating's supposed to be pretty good, but it's still a coating. I imagine it can be scraped off. Mm-hmm. Didn't somebody do that? Didn't they strip it down to the actual titanium?
And I think some people have determined what percentage it is titanium, you know, thinking it's is it really titanium.
They ran it through some machine, and apparently it's like 98% or something. It's like it is titanium.
Yes, it is titanium.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay, enough about the Apple Card.
Welcome this is to not the Apple Card Cast.
Hey, I like it. I like there you it. Go. Apple Card Cast. Let's talk about some stuff from the watch here. Again, we're in the hangover period, waiting for the watch. Okay, my first story, I did not plan this. First story up is about the Apple Card. But I'm taking these in order that they came this week. Apparently now, you know, Apple offers 3% on its Apple Card for stuff you purchase from Apple, whether it's online, in a retail store, et cetera. Well, now apparently they are going to expand that to Walgreens. So they've partnered with Walgreens. You'll get 3% cash back on any Walgreens purchase.
That's great.
You have to use Apple Pay. But the cash back applies to any purchases made at Walgreens, retail stores, their website, or Duane Reade chain of pharmacies. That's pretty cool. Because, currently it's only for Apple, you know, for hardware and services done, you know, like the App Store. You could get 3% too, I do believe. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they also partnered, and I did not realize this, with Uber and Uber Eats last month. For 3% back.
Mm-hmm.
So those are two expanded things. Now, they do say that they reserve the right to change that offer at any time, so it's not guaranteed that that deal will last forever. So
that's good.
Of course, guess what the first 5 or 6 purchases on my card happened to be? Walgreens. No, Walgreens. I did not get 3%.
You just got 1%, I guess, right?
Yeah, and now it's 3. So
that's good.
But I
assume that'll grow the retailers and places you can get the 3%.
I would hope so. I think partner with different ones for that. Okay, next up, and this is interesting. It's just Apple's being a little more aggressive, I think, with their. Moving their apps forward, they say that any Apple Watch apps must now be built on Watch OS 6 SDK and support the Series 4 by April of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty aggressive.
Very, very.
When they cut it off at Series 4 or later, that the app must support that to be considered for the review process. They typically do push developers to kind of keep up with the latest and greatest features, and this kind of makes sure that everybody has access to these new technologies, right? Mm-hmm. So forcing apps and their updates to a particular timeline also guarantees that the App Store stays up to date. Now, they also took this notice to remind developers of the benefits of the new App Store for the Apple Watch. In which you don't need a host iPhone in order to search and find and download apps for the watch. That's pretty cool. And the fact that you can actually create a watch app now without the accompanying app on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really pushing developers here.
Looks that way.
And I'm trying to think, we should probably talk to...
I guess neither one of us do development. I wonder how much different there are between the different versions of the SDK.
Well, I've been following Will Bishop, who the kid from Australia that we interviewed that does Chirp and what's his other
MiniWiki.
He does those apps for the watch, and we should probably talk to him about it because I'm following him on Twitter and he's been posting a lot of questions, you know, to developers is, should I do this or should I do that? Because apparently there's a lot of different ways of doing stuff now. So I think it'd be kind of fun to let the dust settle a little bit once the watchOS 6 is out. And I think he's just updated both of those two main apps. But once I've had some time to play with those, we should probably have him back on just to kind of get
That's a good idea. That'd be interesting to learn.
See what his experience was. And then let's talk about watch bands here for a second. I didn't even think about this.
Your favorite subject.
But I didn't even think about this. The new Series 5 comes with a Compass app. Now, Apple is saying, is this from Apple? Wait, who is this from? It's from Mac Rumors. That apparently they're... Mac. No, this is from Mac Rumors.
Mac Rumors, okay.
Yeah, is saying that Apple watch bands with magnets may cause interference with the Compass. Which I guess makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is from Apple's website, and it's fine print on its website. It indicated that these bands may cause interference. That includes the Milanese loop, the modern buckle, and the leather loop. But things like the sport band, sport loops, link bracelets, Nike, Hermes bands, they don't contain any magnets and won't affect it. So this is not something from Apple. This is just magnets can interfere with compasses.
Those magnets, they work well, like the Milanese loop, but it's also at the other side of your wrist. So I guess it would still get in the – it possibly could impact the watch, even though it's got to go through your hand.
Yeah, I thought about that when I read this story. I guess that's why I didn't even consider this, is the magnet is not that strong, first of all. And second of all, it is as far away from your – kind of as far away from your wrist as, or your watch band as you, watch, I'm sorry, as you can get, right? When it wraps around.
Right.
So it's going through your arm and affecting, wait a minute, so I've got magnetic going through my wrist? Wait a minute. That's not good.
That's at least your worries, Tom.
Oh, I guess so. But anyway, I'll be able to check that out on Friday.
Yes, you will.
To see if that actually has an effect. Okay, and now this next story gained a lot of traction this past week. We never really talked about it because of the launch of the watch and everything else. But apparently there's a story from the Washington Post about Apple copying features from the top apps in the App Store. And it kind of went along with the thing that Apple's algorithm, when you search for an app, would put their apps ahead of others. Which Apple immediately fixed once they discovered that. Apparently, it's been that way forever. But, you know, kudos to them for fixing that issue. I don't know if it was intentional. Maybe it was initially and nobody ever went back and fixed it. But what this article is about is the fact that Apple, basically saying Apple steals ideas from other companies. When an app is popular and has shown proof of concept, then Apple creates its own and pretty much what we call the industry term Sherlock's it. And this is a great article. This is by John Gruber of Daring Fireball. And I'll put a link in the show notes to this.
It was nice. Good article.
A very good article. He had some great points about this. Basically saying, what's the alternative for Apple to never add any features to the OS that exist in third-party apps? Well, that's not the alternative.
Right.
Yeah. And he says, one of the factors every successful developer considers is whether or not an idea might be something that Apple or Google or Microsoft or whoever the vendor might be, might incorporate as a feature in the system. The more basic the feature, the more likely that is. And he said the flashlight is a perfect example. It's so obviously a good feature for the system that it is one of the few buttons on the lock screen now.
Right.
Right? Next to the camera. So he's right about that. You know, if you're a developer, that's probably the first thing you think about. Or even if you go ahead with it, it's always in the back of your mind. You know that one day this could happen.
Exactly.
Right? He said, the key to competing with Apple as a third-party developer is to focus on segments of the audience that want more than just the basics. Apple's mail, podcast, notes, and calendar apps, just to name a few, are well done and much used. And all of those categories have very successful third-party alternatives that did not go out of business, right? So, yeah, he's got some very good points here. He said that when a utility is designed to compensate for a hole in the OS, the developer should not expect that hole to remain unfilled forever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that totally.
Good point, yeah.
Yeah, great, great article, John Gruber here.
There's risk and reward for developers, and
there is.
You got to balance that.
Mm-hmm. You got to offer something more. And, you know, we joke about it on the show. We call it being Sherlocked, but that's all we're really doing is highlighting the fact that that was probably a feature that should have been there. And eventually Apple does get around to it. Okay, next up, I want to talk about, and this comes to us from 9to5Mac, from our friend Zach, who was on the show a couple of times now. This is his article. It's about the Apple Watch Series 5, about how much lighter is the titanium versus the stainless steel. Okay, so the all-new titanium case touts a superb strength-to-weight ratio, is what Apple calls it. He said Apple says the new material is lighter than stainless steel, but how much of a difference is there really? So in this article, Zach lists the actual grams for each watch, for the 40 millimeter and the 44 millimeter. For the 40 millimeter, aluminum is 30.8 grams, titanium is 35.1, ceramic is 39.7, and stainless steel is 40.6. Mm-hmm. So in that case, ceramic is actually heavier than the titanium, but not as heavy as the stainless steel. In the 44 millimeter, it runs the same way, just bigger numbers. So aluminum's 36.5, titanium's 41.7, ceramic is 46.7, and stainless steel is a big 47.8. So the difference there is what, 5 grams? Mm-hmm.
12%. 5 grams, 12%.
Between the titanium and the stainless steel.
15%, yeah.
I'm not even considering the ceramic in there, but
yeah,
I guess I should. But I'm just comparing the two metals because I've owned the stainless steel, and I loved how heavy it was. Felt very substantial. And I've had the aluminum ever since. I think I'm going to like the titanium being a little bit heavier than the aluminum.
Yeah, it's smack dab in the middle, it looks like, from weight standpoint.
Yeah. So we will see how that is. Now, Apple's titanium, Zach says in this article, is not just run-of-the-mill. It has special characteristics to help it wear better over time. They said for our natural titanium finish, we developed a special surface coating that prevents yellowing, staining, and showing fingerprints.
Mm.
So, you know, honestly, that's, you know, and it's got that, it looks different than stainless steel because it's got that brushed metal pattern on it. Okay, stainless steel is more like a mirrored finish to it.
Right, right.
And the titanium is a little more rugged. Honestly, that made my decision right there. I mean, other than just being able to try a new type of casing between the stainless steel and the titanium, that was my decision. I've owned the stainless steel. You see every little nick and scratch and flaw.
Yeah, I've had all four of my versions have been stainless steel, and I've been wondering if I should switch. I know I looked at the pricing. What was the pricing of the titanium that you purchased? Was how much more was it than the stainless steel?
Then the stainless, it was, I'd have to look that up. I don't think it was that far off.
Okay.
Than the stainless. Yeah. So let me see. It's,
so the ceramic's the outliner from a price standpoint.
Oh, by far. Yeah.
And I thought it would be a little heavier too. The ceramic coming in third out of four, I was a little surprised. It's close to stainless steel, but I thought it'd be heavier.
Yeah. I don't know. When you see it white like that, I just think of things like the iPod. I don't think of it as being heavy at all, but we know it is. Mm-hmm. But let's see here. If I go to Apple's website and I'm looking at the Apple Watch Series 5, let's see. Stainless steel, not gold. Hold on. Let's go down to the... Okay, black stainless steel is more expensive, isn't it? Okay. That's space black stainless steel.
Mm-hmm.
They've got too many stainless steels now. They have gold. Where? This is crazy. Gold, stainless, aluminum. Here we go. Stainless steel with sport loop. $699. Okay. If we go to titanium, where's titanium? Wow. Let's see. Aluminum, titanium. Titanium starts $7.99. It's $100 difference.
$100 more? Okay.
Yeah, that's not bad.
That's not bad.
For a whole different metal.
Yeah, for a lighter, better looking metal, that's not too bad.
Different finish. I mean, some people like the stainless steel. In fact, they like the little nicks and things that shows character, right, over time. A lot of watches are made of that, but a lot of watches are made of titanium as well. So I think this was a good choice for Apple to put into the mix.
I think so. So I know that either video or pictures won't do it justice when you post it, but that's one thing I may see if they have any in the store that I can kind of take a look at.
Yeah, I think now this won't be a fair test. I have my stainless steel, but it's the Series Zero. It's the first watch. So it's much bigger too, right? It's thicker.
Yeah.
So I can't really compare the weight of that to the new titanium one. The new titanium is going to feel like aluminum next to it.
You know? It is.
Yeah, I don't have a current stainless or more current one to match it to. But we'll see.
Yeah, it's a good article. I mean, if you're interested in seeing that, it's very easy to see the differences and kind of helps you if you want to weigh, no pun intended, weigh the price versus the weight of the watch. What you're going to get.
Yeah.
They all look great, though. I mean, they all look... Yeah. I'm not sure how I'd like the gold when it kind of goes against all the different bands I have, but the other ones all look great.
Yeah, I've never been attracted to the gold one. There are some good bands that match it, pair up with it.
I imagine so, yeah.
Yeah. But it just, you know, something new. Especially these close-ups, and I shouldn't base my judgment on that, but Apple takes such great photos. Mm-hmm. The close-up of the titanium just looks awesome.
It does.
The brushed finish looks really cool. And that will hide any sort of imperfections that you get to some degree, like fingerprints and things like that. So, all right. And then the last thing I want to talk about, this is so silly. This is a patent from Apple. Was published this week, I think, that is Apple is considering using palm biometrics for future Apple Watch and other devices. So what they're talking about is a method to scan the surface of your palm for ID, just like it scans your face or your fingerprint. Mm-hmm. And I thought immediately of, because of the watch, how you touch it with your hand to silence it.
Yes.
It's not that. I think it's just hovering it over the watch.
Right.
And it reads it. And this is crazy. So they've been researching this, or they have been researching stuff about scanning veins and that sort of thing. And now they're talking about just scanning the palm of your hand. So sensors beneath the layer of the display will be configured to sense an image of the user's palm positioned over the display based on light reflected from the user's palm passing through light transmissive portions of the display layer. And that's that's all the technical description of it. Pretty cool.
Yeah. You know, we kind of reference these articles, Tom. The ones about the patents are always I guess it makes sense, the longest and most detailed. And then when I'm done reading it, I'm thinking, I got to read that again because I understood about 10% of it.
Right. And that's why I used to go into great detail on these and I stopped because it's just too much. Yeah. You know, let's just gloss over this real quickly. They're going to scan your palm.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like they'd scan your thumb.
Yeah.
And it's your hand's just going to hover over it. Now, I would imagine there'd have to be some tactile feedback because you can't see it when your hand is over the watch, right?
That's true. Yeah.
So there has to be, there'll be a, like almost like there is when you use Apple Pay with your watch. You get that vibration and that sound, and maybe that's what you'll get when it unlocks. But this is crazy.
Do you think it will Sherlock palm reading?
Actual palm reading?
Yeah.
So, okay, I'll predict it now. The Series 6 with palm reading.
No sleep track, but palm read.
No sleep tracking, but we got palm reading coming. So, and guess what? When it reads your palm, it's going to say that the future is you're going to buy a new watch.
Yes. And then it says it'll take $5 out of your Apple Pay. for the reading.
And you'll buy a new watch every year. So yeah, the lifeline, right? Don't they read a lifeline in your palm?
I guess so. I've never had it done, but you know, I've seen enough TV shows, I guess, where they kind of show it. But
yeah, so the lifeline of your watch is only going to be a year because you're going to have to upgrade. That's crazy. Kind of fun.
It is. But
we'll see. I just wish they would do some of these. We had so many of these patents with the bands, with all the cool stuff in them, and they haven't released any of them.
Yeah, they haven't, especially anything that's outside the watch, like the bands. You would think that would just be an awesome market to get into, and they haven't done anything.
Yeah, I don't know why. I mean, maybe this is just stuff. I guess I do know why. It's one thing to have a concept. It's another to make it work.
It is.
And it's yet another thing to make it work the way Apple wants it to work. Case in point is the AirPower, right? I'm sure they had an amazing patent for it. They actually created the thing. It just wasn't up to their standards. So maybe that's why we don't see a lot of these.
Yeah, and now they're doubly shy to even announce something until probably it's halfway through the production cycle.
They have to be gun-shy about doing any sort of mention of a device until it's really, really ready.
Because we must have mentioned it 50 times in a year between the launch and the death, right?
Oh, yeah, and that was just us. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
All the other media out there looking forward to it. Now, I heard one other interesting thing. This doesn't involve – well, it kind of involves a watch, but it's something I'm still confused about. There were a lot of rumors that the new iPhone 11 would be – you could wirelessly charge from the back of the phone by setting either another phone on it, your AirPods case that has charging, and or an Apple Watch. And there were, I mean, this came, these are very reliable sources said this was coming. And then right before the event, we got notice that no, that feature is not coming. And now I've heard rumors that that feature is there and Apple turned it off in software because it wasn't ready. So that may be a software update that comes down the road that says, oh, by the way, your iPhone 11 can now charge these devices.
And I thought, Tom, too, you mentioned that the watch with the design of the back and how it sits on the current puck.
It can't.
Couldn't sit on the phone.
I didn't think it could.
I was thinking, could you design a case that would allow it? At least a case that would go over the phone and the watch would slip into the case and still get electronically wirelessly charged. Or does it have to be direct
from
contact?
Not from what I understand, because the Apple Watch does not follow the Qi standard for wireless charging. Apple created its own, and it requires a magnetic connection, or so it will not
direct
charge.
Connect magnetic, yeah.
It has to be magnetic, and the back of your phone is not going to be magnetic. And by the way, doesn't that interfere with the compass? When you charge now that I think about it, if I charge the watch, that's a magnetic connection.
Well, if you have your little mobile charger, see what it does.
I'll see what it does. That's pretty interesting.
Go on a hike.
Open up
the
compass and put it on the charger. See what happens. It'll just go haywire, right? It'll just spin around and not point the right direction if it's got interference.
Yeah, I think so.
Either that or some alien is nearby. Which I always see in the movies, right? The compasses go crazy and the lights will blink, right? But yeah, we'll we'll see what happens. But that would be fun feature for them to just say, oh, and by the way. Now, it'd be cool if it was everything but the watch still to be able to charge another phone or your AirPods case.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
It'd be nice, but I still don't know how they would do the watch.
So instead of, I'm going to date myself, instead of when our parents used to say, you got to smoke to a friend, now you can say, you got to charge?
Yeah, that's what they do. Yeah, well, now they're vaping, so that's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
So I think that's it for the news. Did I miss anything?
No, a slower week. Like you said, it's the post-announcement, and I think a lot of people are continuing to put out what was announced and what you can buy. And so, yeah, I think you've hit most of the main points we've got.
Yeah, there'll be a ton of information once these devices start getting in people's hands. Hopefully all good. hopefully there's nothing that Apple missed that will pop up. But So I guess next week I will do my first early review of the watch. I mean, I'll only have had it for a few days at that point, but I'll still do that.
Yeah, I think the same thing happened last year. You ordered yours, and I did the same thing. I said, I'm going to wait. And then I went to Columbus, Ohio for a football game, and I had like 4 hours to kill one night.
Oh, yeah.
So I took an Uber to the Apple store.
Yep.
And walked out with the watch.
Yep.
So I beat you to the punch.
You did. You did. Now, this time, I'm having it delivered. So I may beat you to this one, even if
you will. I'll ironically be in Columbus, Ohio this weekend, but I don't know what my schedule is.
I know what your schedule is. You got a date. Yeah? You got a date with the Apple store, I can tell you right now. Okay, let's move on to what we like this week. Speaking of early reviews, I have something this week that I just received. But I will give you my early review of it. And keep in mind, I've only had it 24 hours. Okay. And it's going to take more time to really get a sense of the pros and cons of this product. This is something I ordered on Indiegogo. I think it was back in the beginning of the year, I think. It's an air power replacement. Okay. One of those types of devices. It's a charger for charging three devices at once. It's called the Slice Charge Pro. And they claim, this is their language, not mine, it's the world's first six-coil wireless charging mat for iPhones and Apple Watch and AirPods case. Now, I mentioned this in the show when I ordered it, and I have to say I was actually surprised to even receive it at this point. They sent an update on that the device was shipping way back in June. I think it was June. And that was the last time I heard from them. In fact, I sent them at least three emails about when mine would ship because I had ordered two of them, and I got absolutely no response at all. Radio silence from them. And looking at the comments on Indiegogo, I was not alone. People were getting quite upset with the lack of updates, communication. I probably should go retract this. I don't know how I can, but I finally made a report to Indiegogo about them, and I'm sure I'm not the only one who did that. I reported them saying, I think this is fraud. They're not going to deliver. That's how bad it was. So after months of silence, I figured they had, you know, maybe gotten in over their heads, and the chance that this device would ever ship was slim to none. And then last week, out of the blue, I got a shipping notice.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And it arrived within a week. So they only missed the mark by, I don't know, a couple of months, I think. And then I get an email that is kind of the campaign update stating the headline was, this is not the end. The campaign is now over, and they've had several manufacturing changes with their components. They had a relocation of their manufacturing plant, which delayed shipping, which was probably mine and a bunch of others. And they also admit in this email that their customer service is their weakness, and they apologize for the delays. They said they've added more staff to better communicate, et cetera, to handle all the response. And that's great. But honestly, all it would have taken was a simple update explaining these issues they were facing. They don't have to answer every single email. Just a blanket update, and everyone would chill out and just wait. This happens on all these different things that you do from Kickstarter and Indiegogo. Mm-hmm. That's just the nature of these campaigns. And I would completely understand that. So, as it stands, they are now selling these chargers on their website. And I looked, there's only a couple of week delivery time. If you order today, they say you're going to get it October 1st.
Wow.
So they've obviously solved their production problems. Mm-hmm. Now, onto the device. similar in form to like any of these chargers, it looks kind of like Apple's AirPower, that shape, with several notable changes. First of all, it's longer than the other devices. Okay, it's a little bit longer and deeper, I think. So it's not quite as portable, but still, in my opinion, you can travel with this. And that was kind of one of my big criteria for one of these devices. The second big difference is that the surface is covered with a fabric-type material, which I love because the smooth plastic ones, the phones tend to slide off of those and lose connection. And not so with this. It stays put. Now, the design of the charger is unique. Other devices I've reviewed have had up to three different separate coils, which included the Apple Watch charger. This one has five overlapping coils. And the sixth one is an actual Apple Watch MFI charger. It's in a ring that can lift up, which is similar to Apple's watch charger, the white round one, for nightstand mode. You can angle it up if you choose to put it in nightstand mode, but it also works flat.
Nice.
And I love that option because it allows you to change the orientation depending on the kind of band that you have on your watch, right? Mm-hmm. Certain bands you can't lay flat. You have to unhook it. Well, this way I can just pop that up and set it in there. One other great feature is the charging cable that comes with the device is detachable from the device. It's not permanent, right? So you can take it out, which is great for travel. A built-in cord is just a break that's waiting to happen over time. And once it does, the device is useless. So I'm happy to see that. Now, I was surprised. The cable is a USB-C type connector. And it includes a 30-watt fast charge wall brick, right? Mm-hmm. Which is pretty large. It's larger than I thought it would be. It's not as small as Apple's, you know, the phone bricks, but it's not as big as, say, the MacBook Pro brick. It's more of the size of the iPad Pro, those fast charging plugs, bricks. And the plug flips into the brick. You know, you flip it open, the two prongs, and plug it in. It can be ordered in either US, EU, UK, or Australian adapters, right? So you can get in any configuration you need. So far, I think this is a great solution. I can charge two phones and a watch, or I can charge a phone, an AirPod case, and a watch. It's nice to have one cable to plug into and charge all these devices. The Apple Watch charger, as I said, is MFI certified, so it will charge all series versions of the Apple Watch. Okay, doesn't matter what you have. And the fabric choices are gray, white, or blue. It costs $129.95, or it's $139.95 for a version that actually comes with a stand that you can angle the charger itself so you can lean the phone against it instead of lying flat. So the phone is kind of sitting up, right? So there's a little stand that you put together that does it. I got the one without the stand, but it's $10 more. Now, the company is called Hard Cider Labs. Their website is hardciderlabs.com, and I'll put a link in the show notes for this. And I will update you on this device later on when I've had more than 24 hours to work with it. But my first impressions are surprisingly very good, considering what it took to get here. I probably should have just waited and ordered this thing when it was done. And I would have had it immediately, and it wouldn't have been a problem. But that's what you get when you go in early on these devices. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I'll do a more extensive review later, perhaps, or at least update you on it.
Well, I've been waiting for your reviews on these kind of things, because one of these days I will take a picture of my hotel room and all the things I have to plug in.
Yes, yes.
And I would love to plug in one thing and charge three things.
Yeah, and that's maybe it's an obsession at this point. I'm trying to find the perfect charger. Okay, that suits all of my needs, that can charge all my devices, and so, you know, this one's it's checking a lot of the boxes. What we'll see. There's I've tried some of the others and they're okay, but there's always like one little thing with it that that makes me, you know, think about every time I put the device on there. I shouldn't have to think about, did I put it on there right? Is it going to stay? Is it going to be charged when I go to pick it up? You know, this wireless charging is convenient, but it's also inconvenient, if that makes any sense.
It's testy.
It's also, I have a similar problem in my, in the vehicle we drive. I have a windshield suctioned carrier for the phone, right, that I have up there with the navigation. It's a wireless charger that you set the phone in, right? The only problem with that is it generates a lot of heat. Wireless charging, I guess any charging does, but wireless really makes the phone warm, and it's up on the dash. So you're driving in the sun, and that phone overheats, and the display just gets lighter and lighter, you know, harder, darker and darker and harder to see.
Right, right.
And I have to take it out and put it where I can get some air conditioning on it and put it back, you know, that kind of thing. So, like I said, wireless is great, but it's got some drawbacks. We're not we're not quite there yet, as far as being convenient. But anyway, what do you like this week?
Well, Tom, as earlier or later last year, I said I was going to try to learn more about my devices this year. And I have like a goal of eliminating my Mac from my technology stack, meaning I don't have to throw it in my bag and take it with me. I mean, I have my work PC. I take my MacBook. I take my phone. I take my iPad. And I only use the Mac for a couple things now. So my iPad, I have an iPad Pro, and I really try to use it exclusively now. And I just wanted to go through some of the things I've kind of learned and inputted into my daily routine from a standpoint of using the iPad. And one of them is multitasking. So a lot of times, for example, I'll listen or I'll watch a webcast of one of my clients, you know, quarterly earnings results. It's basically a PowerPoint chart that charts I go through, and there's an audio at the other end. And I used to watch on my Mac and type notes on my iPad or vice versa. With multitasking, you can just do both on the same screen. You can bring in the Notes app up on the right side and watch the webcast on the left side and type notes simultaneously right on the iPad. So I've really got good at the multitasking where I can bring up multiple apps and use them right to left. I've gotten to the point now where I can drag things I need from one side to the other side in notes. The Notes app, I use something called Notes Shelf to take handwritten notes in meetings, and I can drop and drag, you know, from left to right or right to left, multitasking. So if you haven't used multitasking on your iPad, it's really easy to learn. It takes a little bit of skill to get good at it, but it's a great, great thing. So that's one, the multitasking. It's saved me time and really very productive in a way of doing multiple things at the same time. The other one is using the Files app. So I'd never done that before. So now I'm using it all the time. And it's another way of not having to use my Mac, where I had all my files for my small business on my Mac. And that's why I had to bring it with me. So now I put all my files on my iCloud drive. And now I can access those from anywhere at any time. But also on my Files app, I've loaded my OneDrive for my company as well as Dropbox. So now I can pretty much pull up anything I need on my iPad and edit it. There is a little bit of making sure you don't leave a file open on one device and edit it on another. I learned a little bit there, but I've gotten, you know, used to that and better at it, and it hasn't happened.
Right.
Where I've lost track of which one is the most recent. But man, that Files app is powerful, where you can bring all your files at your fingertips, edit them and save them and use them again. So that's great. And then finally, the one thing I have not done yet, which is my next to-do, is I do need to tunnel into PCs, like the back office computer at my small business. I like to tunnel in every day to check the sales and everything else is going on. I'm going to use Chrome Remote to do that, but I still have to go through my Mac to do it. I haven't been able to connect the iPad directly to the right to the PC using the Chrome access. But there's a couple of other things I'm looking at. But once I can tunnel into my PC from my iPad, then I won't need the Mac anymore. So that's one of the last things I've gotten to do. So I'm going to learn that. Three other things I haven't done yet, which are up next for the iPad, is one, doing this podcast from the iPad, right?
Not
from
my Mac. I was just going to say, there's one you can't do.
Yeah. I'm going to do that. Using a mouse or a trackpad. I do like the finger pad on the Mac. I've gotten really, you know, that's really good. And I do use the keyboard on the iPad. But one, that thing's kind of loud. You've ever used a keypad on the iPad? It's like peck, 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 peck. You know, it's loud. And,
right.
And it's not as, and there is a way to, you know, kind of use your finger to move the cursor around, like a trackpad. And I haven't printed yet. So I'm going to learn to do all those things from my iPad and really make it a device that's end to end, right? Instead of just reading the newspaper, watching a movie or reading a book, now I'm using it for business, and it's really become a productive device. And I think I'm really close to giving my Mac to someone. So that's what I like this week. I really, really enjoyed getting to learn the iPad.
Well, that's great. I'm glad you can do that, because that's been one of those things that people have been trying to do for years, and Apple keeps improving the OS to allow them to do it. Right? Mm-hmm. There's always a tipping point where it's not worth it, you know. And then when Apple keeps adding all these features, it suddenly becomes worth it for a lot of people. Now, I'm going to throw a monkey wrench into your whole thing, into your workflow. You take a laptop, right? You have a MacBook?
I do, yes.
Okay. And your iPad and the new Catalina coming out for your MacBook and the new iPad OS allows you with Sidecar to turn your iPad into a second screen.
Yes.
So now you've got a huge canvas to work with, you know, moving files, doing back and forth. I know that's not what you're looking for. You're looking to replace your MacBook completely. Unfortunately, the way we do this podcast, I don't know that you can right now. Technically we record this through right now. Maybe we'll find a different way to do it. But right now we use an app that not only has to be done on a computer. You can't use it on a tablet yet.
Maybe they'll change that in the future.
You can't use it on a tablet and it has to go through Chrome, which drives me crazy. I've had to switch my workflow. Because I'm all in on Safari and now I'm having to learn Chrome. And I don't like it only because it's
the same here. Exactly.
Nothing wrong with it. I just don't know it as well. But I have to admit it is more stable on a lot of things, that I do online. So check out Sidecar. The other thing is you talk about the iCloud Drive. That's a love hate thing too. Because I've had things not show up, you know, and it's on one device, it's not on another, and for some reason it doesn't show up, and then all of a sudden it does at some point,
and it drives me crazy. I haven't had that issue. I had the you edited ones and didn't close it issue, and now I'm just gotten in the habit of closing everything.
But you shouldn't have to. That's what I'm saying. Even if you leave them open, you should be opening the same thing on another device because. Well, it depends on the app. I'm sorry. I take that back. It depends on if you're using Keynote, Pages, Numbers, all of Apple's apps. You should be able to...
Which I don't. I use Microsoft Excel and Word. And
that's different. That's completely different. I'm specifically talking like Pages and stuff like that, where I will create a whole new document on one machine and then go to another machine and it doesn't show up in the cloud. It's not there. I have to airdrop it to get it on there, you know, and then a week later it's there. So I don't know what's going on with that.
I'm about 6 weeks into this and I have not come across that issue at all.
Okay. Maybe it had to do with the version of OS I'm running, how old the machine is. There's a lot of variables as to how this stuff works, but when it does work, it's beautiful. It's absolutely amazing that you can do that. You can just jump from one to another to another. And I do agree. I made this switch probably a year ago. I started throwing everything into iCloud. I mean, I've got whatever the max amount is you can get on iCloud, and I'm throwing everything for the business in there, a copy of it. Mm-hmm. So I have it no matter where we are.
Yep.
And any device, I can look it up. And that is fantastic. I am worried I'm going to run out of room at some point because I'm using it like an infinite hard drive, right? That has no end to it because you don't even think about it. You just throw stuff in there, right?
No, exactly. Well, you try to organize it and be the best you can, but you can put everything in there. Now, there's more than one thing that annoys me, but you know what? One thing that does annoy me is you can't change the text color in a mobile device, in a note, in the Notes app.
You're not... Maybe that changes with iOS 13.
It might. They did hype that the Notes app's going to get updated a little bit. And they need to get the dang Notes app on the watch, even if it's dictation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it isn't really... there's no notes here. I'm looking at my watch like you can see this. I'm going through all the apps, seeing if there's another version for notes, and I don't see any. So Yeah, there is no version of that. I mean, there is reminders, but there's no notes.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. That's great. Keep us updated on that, because
I will.
You're going to eventually cut the Mac cord completely.
I will. I'll still have it in my office, and if I need it, I'll use it. But when I travel, I'm gonna save myself a couple pounds in my bag and another device that I don't have to take out if I don't go through TSA pre-check, and I'll be good.
See, I'm terrible because we don't fly. We drive.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't even think about it, and I take too much.
Probably.
It's like, I can take that. Yeah, it's just space in the van. I can take that. And you end up with stuff you never use on the whole trip, you know?
I can teach classes on how to pack effectively.
Okay. I'm getting there. I can tell you how to pack a van.
I'm stuff. Totally other opposite end of that.
Yeah, you can do the luggage. I'll do the actual vehicle because it's like a Jenga puzzle. You know, you gotta, this fits here and this fits there, and it never quite.
I can do 8 days in India with the smallest bag you've ever seen.
That's great. All right, let's. There's a couple of listener feedbacks I just wanted to mention real quick. First one, this was on. See, the 13th. Today is what? The 17th. This is like 4 days ago. A longtime listener, Donna Campbell, just sent me a screenshot with the word Nike and dollar signs. And it was the Adapt Huarache shoe that I mentioned that you can control with the Apple Watch to tighten the laces was released. And she sent me a screenshot from Nike.com. I immediately went to Nike.com. And every color, every version sold out. So sorry, Donna, I got to it that day. I may have even gotten to it that morning, but it wasn't soon enough. I think unless you went in immediately, that's the kind of thing people were waiting to do, totally sold out. Hopefully they'll come back into stock. They did put a price on there, though, $350 for these shoes. A little pricey. But they're cool. They're very cool. So thank you for that, Donna. And then another email here. This is from Kathy. Kathy says, I heard you guys talking about the different Apple Card colors, and here's what I found. I don't know if we ever mentioned these before, but according to Apple, green is for travel, blue is for transportation, orange is food and drink, pink is entertainment, purple is services, yellow is shopping, and red is health. She says, I love listening to the podcast as I work out. Thanks for providing us with a way to learn more about our Apple Watches. I'm anxiously awaiting my Series 5. Kathy, thank you for your email, Kathy.
That's great, yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I'm still mesmerized by what Vincent told us week before, that if you look at your Apple Card on your phone and you turn your phone, the colors go like a lava lamp and move.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I still do that. I still look at it. I'm just fascinated by it. It's just like, it's crazy. But now I almost want to run out and buy things in different colors, just see what it looks like.
Tom.
Quick, buy a movie ticket would be entertainment. Let's see what the pink looks like, yeah. Right? Yeah. Food and drink is orange. I already did that.
Blue. Walgreens, would that be health?
That's health. Yeah. That's red. I don't have, well, yellow is in there too, just shopping. Travel, I don't have green for travel. That would be interesting. You might get that though, right?
I would kill that.
Yeah, your card's going to be green. You have the green Apple Card. That's it.
Yeah, really.
Anyway, that's pretty cool. Thanks for all your emails and keep them coming, and we'll get to them when we can. Is there anything else before we check our email yet again for a shipping notice on our shiny new Apple products?
I think we're good, Tom.
Okay. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode. Thank you, Chris, for being here. I really do appreciate it. And thank you to everyone out there for listening. If you'd like to support our show, check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/AppleWatchCast. It's a great way to help us to continue to produce this show. So check it out at patreon.com/AppleWatchCast. Links to the stuff we talk about can be found on our website at applewatchcast.com. You can subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts or any other podcast service you prefer, like Apple Podcasts. I already said that. If you have a question about the Apple Watch or about our show, send us an email at comments at applewatchcast.com. Look for us and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. If you're a Patreon subscriber and want to hear what we talk about after the show, an episode of Overtime will be available for this show. As always, thanks for listening. Until our next show, you're on your own time.
Remember to rate us 5 stars on iTunes.